The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome back to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. You can find us on Twitter at @Bastards_Boston. I'm your host, Charlie Smith, coming to you from Los Angeles, California, by way of Providence, Rhode Island. You can find me on Twitter /X @Smith_MLB. Our other hosts for this episode are Jason Kelly, coming to us from Canton by way of Westwood, Massachusetts, and Nick Diamond coming to us from Broward County, Florida. Jason, how are you, and where can the fans find you on Twitter?
Doing pretty well. Just furiously checking Twitter every 5 minutes to see if any moves get made. Deadline season is fun but stressful. So, it's just been a little bit of a time. Otherwise been good. If people want to bug me on Twitter, you can find me at Color of the Iris.
Excellent. And that's Color the Canadian, or no, European way. COLOUR for those taking notes. Nick, how are you doing? Where can the fans find you?
I'm doing well, coming off a bad loss, but doing all right now. You guys can find me on Twitter at N Diamond Media. Just at N Diamond Media.
Excellent. So we're going to do something a little bit different on this episode. We're going to focus on the moves so far that the Boston Red Sox have made. Not really the players that we thought we were going to be getting as far as positions and players of need, but the biggest trade so far has been getting another catcher from the Toronto Blue Jays. They're in full sell mode. I'm shocked all we got was Danny Jansen, but Jansen comes over from Toronto for Cutter Coffee, Gilberto Batista, and Edinson Paulino. Jason, what is your take on that trade? 3-for-1.
Yeah, initially it kind of pissed me off because I don't think Danny Jansen should warrant three prospects. I think that's a little bit insane. But then again, you see, other deals happening around baseball. You see the Padres giving up their number three prospect for a relief pitcher from Tampa. So it's just another one of those crazy deadlines where prices are super high. At the end of the day, Jansen is such an upgrade over Reese McGuire. It's not even funny. He hasn't had a great year, but he's been a good player in the past. He's been a good player for a number of years, still under 30 years old. He's just, 28 years old. So I think getting him to kind of pair with Connor Wong and kind of upgrading your catching battery is good, because I just think every time Reese McGuire had a good start to the season, but ever since April, I mean, if he's in the lineup, it's just a black hole. He's giving you nothing offensively. He's never been a great defensive catcher. He's not great at throwing out runners. So I think that you got an upgrade defensively and you got an upgrade with the bat. And Jansen can handle right-handed pitching. He's not a straight platoon guy. You can put him in against righties and he'll do just fine. So I like that as well, because Reese McGuire can't hit lefties to save his life. So you couldn't put him in there against a lefty. It was going to be a disaster. So at the end of the day, you did upgrade your catching position, which I like. That's now a very strong position for you with Wong, Jansen, and Kyle Teal knocking on the door. I looked a little bit more into the three prospects. So Coffee, Paulino, and then the Batista kid. Batista, we don't know much about. He's just 19 years old. He's a long way away from making an impact. Edinson Paulino was a name that I'd heard, but his power numbers are way down this year in AA. He was usually a 10 to 15 homer guy, and he's only hit 3 home runs in AA this year. So I think he's probably not a guy that's going to be a big impact bat going forward. And then Connor Coffey, I think, is just kind of a – he's going to be a utility guy. You know, I don't think that he's going to really turn into anything major. So, yeah, you had to give up three prospects, but I don't think you're giving up anything that you're going to lament down the road. I don't think that Connor Coffey is going to be hitting number three in anyone's batting order anytime soon and, you know, making you regret the trade. So on the surface, it doesn't look great giving up three prospects for a backup catcher. But I think in the long run, it's a trade that will benefit them. It'll help Connor Wong, maybe give him a few more days off here and there going forward because he was kind of carrying the brunt of the load there. So it'll keep him healthy. Again, Jansen has been a good player in the past. He's just had a down year. But again, he was stuck in Toronto. Toronto's kind of a hell situation right now. So maybe you bring him back over here, change the scenery, get him to play at Fenway Park a little bit more, might get a little more out of him. So ultimately, I'm okay with the deal. I'm not like over the moon about it, but I'm okay with it after sort of processing it, you know, looking into all those players. So I think it was a good deal.
Nick.
So like Jason said, Danny Jansen's absolutely an upgrade over Reese McGuire. I don't think anyone's going to disagree with that. The only thing I really hate about this deal is it's not the prospects that they gave up. I don't care that they gave up three prospects who probably won't even play in the major leagues at this point. It's the fact that they had $13 million to play with, and they already used a couple million dollars on James Paxton, and they're going to use part of that money on a backup catcher who they don't need. I'm assuming ownership's not going to go over this luxury tax. So they had $13 million to play with at this deadline, and you spend whatever that chunk of change is on Danny Jansen, a pointless trade. Maybe he is a decent right-handed bat that can platoon with Yoshida at the DH spot. Maybe it gives you an opportunity to have Connor Wong play second base or first base more often. It gives you a little bit of versatility, but if you're going to spend that money and you only had $13 million to begin with, I'd rather get a second baseman. I'd rather get a shortstop. I'd rather go get a guy who hits bombs. I don't want Danny Jansen like that. It's not a bad trade. It is an upgrade over Reese McGuire, but I do think it was kind of pointless.
Yeah, you know, one thing that Jason had talked about, and I'm going to get into what you just talked about in a moment, the Philadelphia Phillies have a GM, you know, Chainsaw Dave, for the lack of a better term. He doesn't care what he has to chop through and get rid of in order to get what he wants. And he ended up getting rid of George Klassen, and there was another player. I'm just looking at his name. Samuel Aldighieri. They were the fifth and seventh prospects, according to the MLB pipeline, to get Carlos Estevez, a closer. And I don't know how much control he actually had, but it cost the fifth and seventh best prospect to get a closer for a couple months of baseball. That's mind-blowing. Now they assume the third and the eighth spot in the Angels pipeline. The Angels are stocking up. I mean, if the Angels are smart, they're also trying to find a way to move somebody like Mike Trout. No one's going to take Rendon. We're all aligned there. Nobody in their crazy mind would ever consider making such a stupid move. That's just not going to happen. But the picks that we, or the players rather, that we got rid of, I don't think it was crazy. You know, Coffey has 14 homers at, you know, high A. He's hitting .238, stolen a couple bases. Batista's got a 3.92 ERA right now, and he's averaging a little over a strikeout per nine, but he's allowed a lot of runs. And then Paulino, also just a 21-year-old kid. He's in double A. He's got 35 RBIs, a couple of home runs, .263 batting average. If he comes into anything, it's going to be a lot like the young guy that the – oh, my God, the Red Sox gave him up. He was a farm guy in the Brewers trade that brought over Thornton. I don't remember his name, but now he's – I think it was Mauricio Dubon. That was his name. And, you know, nothing crazy. We didn't think anything was going to happen with him. His career hasn't really blown up. He's not like a superstar or anything like that. But if he ends up being somebody, it'll probably be somebody like that in 5 or 6 years when he gets a chance in the bigs. Nick already hit up on the fact that getting a backup catcher, and Terry has also talked about this, you know, the Bastards account had posted, you know, number one, we need a pitcher. Number two, we need a power right-handed bat. Number three, we need this. Number four, whatever. Number 174, a backup catcher. Like, what are we doing? So money we've already invested to Paxton, which we're going to talk about in a few minutes. we got a backup catcher. Danny Jansen is not someone who's, you know, lighting up the Christmas tree. Jansen's had numbers go down for three straight years. So, I mean, this is a guy who only has a couple home runs. He's, you know, not hitting the ball for power in 61 games so far. He's hitting .212 with six homers, 18 RBIs. The guy's one career stolen base in seven career seasons. We're obviously not getting him for his speed. So, obviously, Wong has the uptick there. He's got a 300 OBP. His OPS is 670. He doesn't play any other positions. I think that the money could have been better invested by getting another pitcher. I think getting a backup catcher just was not the answer. And with the amount of money that we had, this is going to be, I think, another one of those deadlines where the biggest addition that we have is players that come back from IL. And we've done that before, but that's not a sufficient solution. That's not an acceptable solution. And if the Red Sox continue to do this, you're going to lose the team. You have players on the team, Rafi Devers, Kenley Jansen, who have vocally said, get players here. Bring people to Boston. Give us a chance. You adding Jansen and getting rid of prospects that no one's ever heard of is not saying, yeah, we're giving them a chance. And saying, oh, yeah, we needed a pitcher. We needed, you know, another right-handed bat. We needed a catcher, whatever, a reliever, whatever you want to say. This isn't what we're talking about. This is not – this isn't it. Like, when we want a power hitter, I want someone who can hit the ball. And, I mean, singles are great. Danny Jansen, one game, couple singles. That's great. I don't expect him to do that every game. Guy's hitting .212 this year. I don't think all of a sudden playing at Fenway Park and being a member of the Boston Red Sox changed the game for him. So this is just, you know, it's good. I'd love to give Danny a chance, but this is not the move that we're expecting. And to Nick's point, I don't think the team is going to go above and beyond and overspend, go over the threshold in order to get this team what we really, really need. Are we the team that's going to go out and get Garrett Crochet? No. Are we the team that's going to go out and get another power bat? It would have been awesome to get Vladdy Guerrero. There was someone who was tinkering. I forget, Jason, I'm not sure if it was you or Terry that was talking about the idea of trading Costas and a couple prospects to get Vladdy. Was that you or was that Terry?
That was probably Terry. It's also, I mean, okay. That's been talked about on the airwaves as well. So that's coming.
I don't hate it. I really don't hate it. You have the opportunity to bring in a guy who's got experience at first base. That man with the monster in left field. I mean, we're probably gonna have to take an insurance policy out in that field so he can rebuild it because he's gonna be, you know, destroying it on a regular basis. So a move like that could have really propelled your team. I mean, you have Vlad Guerrero, you have Devers, you have Tyler O'Neill, Jaron Duran. No, that's not the sexiest 1-4, but if that's your 1-4, oh my God. Perfect little mix. You got the lefties in there, you got the righties in there, two of each. That's a dream made in heaven. That tells me your team should be taken seriously. That tells me that you're serious about winning. And right now, it's not there. Your pitching isn't getting it done. Your offense is doing everything they can to score runs. But if you score 7-8 runs and your team that you're facing scores 10 or 11, you didn't get the job done. So anything else we want to add on Jansen?
To me, it's a safe move. It's a very safe trade. You didn't give up any big-time prospects, and you got a backup catcher. What concerns me is that I think that sets the trend for what you're probably going to get for the rest of this deadline. Safe moves, nothing too risky, not a Garrett Crochet splash move, not a Vlad Guerrero trade. You're going to get safe moves for guys who really don't add any more wins to your ball club in the second half.
So I want to do one quick look. I just quickly took a peek at Estevez, who's now pitching with the Phillies, and he's getting $2.35 million this year. He's a free agent in 25. So you gave away your fifth and your seventh prospect for a two-month rental. I don't think the Red Sox are willing to part ways with the top three for rentals in any way, shape, or form. I think it's a stupid play, and I don't think the Red Sox are willing to do that. Yeah, Nick, go ahead.
Like you're saying, like they gave up their fifth and seventh best prospect for a rental reliever. You could spin it the other way around and say, what can we get for Kenley Jansen, who is a bigger name than Carlos Estevez? Could you get somebody's third and fifth best prospect? Probably could, or fourth, or, you know, Or maybe you get like, you know, like the Padres just gave up their third best prospect. Maybe you can get somebody's second or third best prospect.
Right.
It's a possibility that they might trade him still. I really don't think that's out of the question.
If, you know, if Martin can come back after dealing with, and this is in no way, shape or form like us, you know, making fun or anything, but dealing with the mental health thing, that's obviously something we want you to take seriously. If he can become the closer and Kenley Jensen gets moved, then you have more money to play with. Is that still enough to say, yeah, we're going to get another starter? I don't know what it would take to get Fetty from Chicago. I know Chicago's selling. We're obviously not going to be in on Crochet. It looks like Crochet is going to somehow find his way with the Dodgers because the Dodgers are like Christmas. Whatever they want for Christmas, they're going to get. And it's been like that all year. I wouldn't be surprised if the Red Sox at least make a move. I don't want to hear that we're rumored or like we're one of the teams in on Fetty because we were allegedly a team in on Ohtani and a team in on Freeman and all that. And it's just hogwash. You know, we're not really a team in on those guys. Make a move. Get rid of one of your top three. Get rid of another top 10 guy and then extend Fetty. You know, like say we're going to do something, but don't let these moves be the only ones that we're going to make in 2024. And then the addition of Casas, assuming he comes back, be the third piece that we're going to get back for 2024. Anything else that you want to add, Jason, for Jensen?
No. I think, again, just safe move. And, you know, if he produces a little bit, fine. But, yeah, I agree with you. There's got to be more.
Absolutely. So that's going to slide us into our next trade or addition acquisition that we got. The Red Sox had James Paxton for a couple years. 1 year he pitched, 1 year he did not. The following season as a free agent, signs with the Dodgers, and then proceeds to pitch against the Red Sox, strikes out seven, allows in five innings of work, kind of looked bad in the first inning, low 80s, and then was able to elevate to 96, 97 with the kind of, I like to call like an FU fastball, like you guys didn't want to pay me, and that's kind of what it looked like. And the Dodgers rewarded him by DFAing him, which a lot of people were kind of curious about, but I personally think that the only reason why Paxton got DFA'd is because Kershaw came back. That's just the fact of the matter is this team is, you know, the Dodgers love their toys that they've had for 10 plus years, and Kershaw will be a lifer as a Dodger. I can't picture him ever playing for another team. I don't think he can picture himself playing for another team, and the fans don't want him playing for another team. So that was just a product of Kershaw coming back. They needed to release someone. I'm shocked it was him and it wasn't somebody else. But it's a team that's been decimated by starting pitching injuries. They've had seven starters on the IL and or being sent back down to the minors, that being Bobby Miller. So I was surprised. And so that being said, the Dodgers end up trading Paxton to the Red Sox for the minor league infielder, Moises Bolivar, who's a 17-year-old Venezuelan in the Dominican Summer League. So far, he's hit 270 with three homers and 19 RBIs. Jason, anything you would like to add?
Yeah, again, you know, another kind of safe move. Paxton wasn't going to cost you really anything. They gave up a 17-year-old. Well, you'll probably never hear from, so that's fine. I'm glad they at least got a starter. And I know that Paxton is, you know, not what he used to be. He's barely getting through four innings, five innings. You know, velocity was down except for, you know, that one weekend start. So I just think you go out, you make the move for him, you bring him here, pair him with Andrew Bailey, see if Andrew Bailey can find something to tinker with him, try to fix something and get more out of him. If he gets you just a couple more wins here down the stretch, it's worth it. So, and we'll see. I mean, this Seattle series is going to be his first test. He's going to, you know, he's going to pitch against the Mariners in the middle of that series. You know, again, I'm okay with it because your alternative options were Cooper Criswell for a few more starts or like seeing Chase Anderson as an opener or something like that. I'll take James Paxton over those options any day. So again, he might be cooked. He might start that Seattle game and give up seven runs in the first inning and that's that, right? But if he at least gets you a little bit more, it was worthwhile. So, you know, to me, I'm okay with it.
Yeah. Nick?
I mean, James Paxton, we know what he is now. He's old. He's going to get you four innings probably. I think he'd be a perfect guy to piggyback off with, like, Cooper Criswell. You try to get 9 to 12 outs out of eat both of them and then kind of save the bullpen for the rest of the game. Or, you know, I mean, you gave up nothing for him, so it's a low-risk move. The only thing that I would like to bring up that Jason brought up is, you know, he'd like to get him in here with Andrew Bailey. I know Andrew Bailey's helped the Red Sox for the most part this season, a lot of pitchers, but he just came from the Dodgers, and the Dodgers are known for fixing pitchers. If you can't fix it with the Dodgers, how is Andrew Bailey going to do anything with him? I mean, he's a 35-year-old pitcher. It's not like he's 25. He's been doing it for 15 years, you know? There's not much you can change with an older pitcher and a new pitching coach, I think. So I don't know if Andrew Bailey will do much. I mean, it's worth a try, but hopefully he can just get some innings and kind of help out the rest of the staff and keep their arms a little bit fresher than they can be.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I was just looking at with Bolivar real quick, this is someone who in 31 games, kind of a weird stat just to look at, but I'm funny that way. 3 homers, 19 RBIs, he'd had 6 doubles, so 10 extra bases, basically that 1 triple, 1 stolen base. He's had 1 game so far with the Dodgers, 2 stolen bases in that game. So I don't know if they're doing something different where they're testing his speed. I don't remember his speed numbers being a big thing, but he's 17 years old. He just turned 17. Venezuela has turned out some incredible talents in, you know, in the history of the game. I mean, the biggest of course being Miguel Cabrera in the 90s. You had the Big Cat, you had Galarraga, Magly Ordóñez is from there, Salvador Perez is from there, Jose Altuve is from there, Victor Martinez back in the day was from there. The sky's the limit for somebody like that, but I don't think Paxton moves the needle in any way, shape, or form. In fact, I recall listening to the last show, Jason, that you, Nick, and Terry had, and it was ultimately, do you want Paxton? And if I'm not mistaken, 2 of the 3 of you said, no, I don't want Paxton. It's not going to move the needle. And I can't recall which of the 2 said no. I think 1 said yes. I could be wrong. But this is just, you know, a guy, you know, Jason, you mentioned maybe 4 innings. He gave us 5. But against his former team, I expect 4 to 5 innings. He'll probably allow 2 to 3 runs. You're probably going to see pitches knee in the low, mid-80s, and then eventually get back up into the 90s. Probably another FU fastball game because the Mariners are another one of his former teams and whatnot. I'm curious to know how he's going to be received. You know, like, welcome back, round 2. You know, you've still pitched less than a year in Boston, and this is technically your 3rd contracted year in Boston. Year 1, you didn't pitch. You were injured. Year 2, you pitched and then got injured, and then you didn't come back for the remainder of the year. And now year 3, you started off with the Dodgers, pieced us apart, destroyed us, and now you're going to pitch for us against another former team of yours. So this is going to be a really rude second half of the season. Like, we're 2-7 right now. There's a chance that you get swept by the Mariners as well. And at the beginning of the year, I recall talking to Terry and saying that this is a team that's going to win, you know, 70 some odd games. We're going to get swept coming out of the All-Star break. And then I changed my tune. I said, no, the Red Sox have been doing great. I think there's a chance that we, you know, we flip-flopped win, loss, win. And we thought game 3 with Cutter pitching that we were for sure, you know, a tick off of for sure win that game. And we just got smoked against that entire, that team in its entirety. And they were down to 50% strength. That's how bad it was. And if that doesn't open your eyes as the Boston Red Sox, I think ultimately that's what the team, the ownership, you know, ownership wanted to see. You know, like, I wonder how they can do against a team that's been decimated by injuries and a team that's struggling right now. How can we do? We're not at 100% strength. We're probably like 80% strength, but that's in relation to lack of injuries and whatnot. Our guys got smoked. Our relievers are getting taxed. Our relievers are getting destroyed. I mean, basically, if you have 2-3 relievers coming in, that's good for 2 earned runs. It doesn't matter which 2 go in there. Even our closer, sadly, unfortunately, and I love Jensen, closer Jensen, not catcher Jensen, for those following along. It's just, it's not going to be enough. And Paxton can do whatever he can to try to help the team, but he's pitched what he's been able to pitch so far. And Jason, I know you like to use that expression, you know, squeeze a little bit more juice out of that orange. And I believe this is the player we were talking about. Like, let's see if we can get just a little bit more. I really don't know how much more you want to try squeezing before you give yourself carpal tunnel and you hurt yourself, because this is a guy who's not on the right side of 30. This is a guy who has had many, many injuries, and who knows that better than Red Sox fans. Last year, disappeared, was gone for, was it the last month or 2 months of the season? And then the year before, didn't even pitch. So ultimately, these additions are leaving me, and I think I can speak on behalf of most of Red Sox Nation, very underwhelmed. These moves are not going to move the needle. This doesn't in any way, shape, or form tell us that we're going to be winning more games above replacement. Jason, anything you want to add, or perhaps you could speak to the which two of the three were like, no, I don't want them. Do you remember who those two were?
I don't off the top of my head. I'm sure I was probably one of them. And my whole premise for it was I want something better, right?
Like, right, of course.
Yeah, so it's one of those things, like, now that he's here and I see the return, I'm like, okay, fine. Yeah, you gave a 17-year-old. Who knows what he'll become? But at least you got him. I still want more. Like, if Paxton's the only starting pitcher you're going to add, that's abysmal. That's completely unacceptable. So, you know, now that he's here, fine. But you've got to do more. And I think what's really irritating me is that it seems like they felt like they had to wait until the very last minute to start making deals, when other teams like the Mariners, even the Rays, like the Rays are selling and they're still having a better deadline than you, because they sold Isak Paredes and they got Christopher Morel back. Christopher Morel is going to hit 40 home runs with the Rays, and he's going to be a menace in this division for years to come. So even a team that's selling is having a better deadline than you. The Seattle Mariners needed a bat. They went out and got a Rosarena. They didn't wait around. You know, and then they went out and got Yimi Garcia as well. They got a reliever. So, and they're behind you in the wild card race. They're right on your heels. And you've got a 3-game series coming up against them where they can leapfrog you. Now, all of a sudden, you're looking at, you're on the outside looking in if that happens. So it's just frustrating that Brezzo is like sitting on his hands, hesitant to make a big move, and other teams around him are not wasting time. And yeah, sure, the prices are high and we're seeing teams give up top 10 prospects, but that's because they want to win and they don't care about it. And it's like, I just feel so frustrated because I just know that the deadline's going to come and go. They're not going to make a big splash move. They're probably barely going to add anything. They might add, like, you know, a middle reliever from a bad team that costs them nothing. And what they'll say is, well, you know, we examined all the trades, but ultimately just prices were too high. And, you know, don't worry, though. We've got Martin and Slayton coming back. We've got Tristan Casas starting a rehab assignment. So they'll do the typical Boston Red Sox thing. They'll say, those are our bigger trade deadline acquisitions. We didn't feel the need to give up a top 5 prospect for, you know, a late inning reliever because we've got guys coming back. It's just the same frustrating cycle over and over again. It doesn't matter who the GM is, whether it's Bloom or Brezzo, like they always do this. So, and I agree with Nick's point, like they're not going to go over the luxury tax. So, and they've already spent some of that money that they had left over. So that kind of limits who they can even trade for now. It's just, it's irritating to see other teams that are with you in the wildcard race that are being more active, and the Red Sox are just sitting there. And it's like, I keep checking Twitter. I'm like, okay, you know, let's get something going here. And I just don't think they're going to do it. I think they're so scared of trading away the wrong prospect and getting it wrong. And the thing about that is, if you're scared and you're scared that you're going to get fleeced in a deal, then your GM's not good enough, because Tampa wins deals left and right. Again, like they're selling and they're also like winning the deadline right now, because they got San Diego's number 3 prospect. They got Christopher Morel. Like, they're not afraid to make deals, but your guy is. If he's afraid that he's going to lose a deal, then he's not the right guy for the job. So that's just what's irritating me.
Nick?
The only thing I kind of wanted to add was, with James Paxton, Greg Breslow and James Paxton had some conversations in the offseason, and they were interested in bringing each other, or Breslow was interested in bringing Paxton back in the offseason. My question is, what changed like in the offseason when he didn't want to sign him to, oh, I'm going to go trade a 17-year-old prospect to bring him back in late July. Like, why couldn't you just sign him in the offseason at this point? Kind of just want to throw that out there. It's kind of a, we wouldn't have had to trade this prospect if we just signed him in the first place.
Yeah, it's it is frustrating. And I mean, ultimately what it's going to come down to is willingness to make moves and serious trades. And Jason, that might be the line of the night. If you're afraid of getting fleeced as a GM and you're afraid of making moves, then you're not good enough. I hope that line resonates with everybody listening, because that's 100% accurate. So it's inexcusable if we're not making moves because we're afraid of getting fleeced. When we do make moves, we're still getting fleeced. So here's the thing. You're already doing it. What's the worst that happens? You get fleeced again? I mean, crap. You gave Sale away for nothing. A prospect that the Braves were willing to part ways with, for example, and I'm going to talk about Sale for a second here since we're talking about moves. You gave him away because he wasn't doing well, and you got nothing back. You got a player back that the Braves were willing to get rid of. And on top of that, you're paying to have Chris Sale pitch in Atlanta. If that doesn't frustrate you, this isn't like David Price pitching in LA. This is worse. This one hurts more, because I feel that Chris Sale was able to do more for us than David Price really in that World Series run year in 2018. Price did great. Sale did more. And I think the way that everything went was pretty poor. And we owed him more than that. So it was really, really unfortunate. But that line, man, if you're afraid of getting fleeced, then you're not good enough. So it's like one of those lines where it reminds me, if you're a sports player, if you're a player in sports, an athlete dies twice, once when they no longer get to play the game that they love, and once when they finally do pass on. So it's very, very true. So that's going to bring us into our reliever that we just got from, surprise, surprise, the Los Angeles Dodgers. They designated Johan Ramirez for assignment. Johan Ramirez is somebody that had allowed 9 earned runs in his last 2 2/3 of work, and that's 4 games, seeing his ERA jump from 4.39 to 5.98. He has a 12.91 ERA. A third of the damage against him this year has happened in the last 4 games. And of course, why would the Red Sox not want to get another Dodger? I mean, we got Paxton, so why not another one? It makes perfect sense. So, Jason, your thoughts on Johan Ramirez, if you have any.
This guy blows. So when you look at his career, he started with Seattle, broke in. He was okay with Seattle. 2022 was probably his most stable year as a reliever. That's with Pittsburgh. Actually stayed there most of the season, was 3-1, had an ERA in the mid-3s. So he was decent. Since then, he's bounced around team to team, and he's just never put it together again. I mean, he was with the White Sox. He was with the Mets. He was with Baltimore. Now recently with the Dodgers, and is all the ERAs throughout, you know, with all those teams are like through the roof. So something happened with this guy where his mechanics just went all out of whack after the 2022 season. And I mean, I haven't seen him pitch very much, but from what I can tell, from what people are saying sort of just on Twitter, the discourse around him is he's got electric stuff when he puts it together, but when it's not put together, he looks like an absolute train wreck. So he's kind of in train wreck mode right now. So look, you got him for free. So, okay. You know, again, maybe the Andrew Bailey pitching factory can fix him. But as Nick said, like, that's not a guarantee. You know, we don't know that Bailey can fix this guy. This guy might be unfixable. That said, you know, we talked about this in one of the other shows, like the bag of crap that is the Boston bullpen right now. I mean, you might as well take a shot on Johan Ramirez, because is he better than Bailey Horn? I hope so. Can he be better than Zach Kelly? I hope so. Can he be better than Greg Weissert? I hope so. So, like, you have to just kind of take a shot, because, again, as I said, I think they're going to play it safe. They're not going to go get a established late inning reliever because they're not going to give up a top 10 prospect, because Breslow's too scared to make that move. So he's going the safe route again. He gets Johan Ramirez for free, and he can say, well, you know, we like his stuff and we thought we could fix him, but ultimately it didn't work out. It's just, that's what he's going to do. So I don't know. I don't know what you're going to get out of Ramirez. You might get absolutely nothing. This guy might just be, another Caleb Ort 2.0 kind of guy. But if they can at least get something and you got him for nothing, okay, fine. But again, to me, it's just more of the safe route and more just not good enough.
Nick.
I'm not going to act like I know so much about Johan Ramirez. I mean, the things I know about him is he lets up a lot of base runners. He walks tons of guys. The only positive that I can see about him is he has a lead extension, which is something that Craig Breslow has talked about in the past. It's a reason why they picked up Cooper Criswell. So maybe that has something to do with why Breslow brought him into the mix. Maybe he sees something. But if you can't make it with the Dodgers with their pitching lab going on, are you going to make it with the Red Sox? Most likely not. So he's really just a depth guy at this point. If he sticks, he sticks. If he doesn't, he doesn't. He'll probably be DFA'd in 10 days. Who knows? It's not like he lost anything. He lost Chase Anderson. So it's, you know, there's no risk to taking this move. Bringing on Johan Ramirez, if he works out, he works out. But realistically, he probably isn't going to work out.
Yeah, it's you know, another depth piece, just like you said. I mean, the feeling that I'm getting right now from the three of us is that it's kind of sorrow. Like, it's not a feel-good trade deadline, because getting players back from IL, that's not a deadline. You know, getting players that used to pitch for you that aren't getting the job done or haven't gotten the job done so far this year with a team that does well with pitchers, that's not a good recipe for success. Johan Ramirez is someone that has gotten absolutely destroyed. I don't know if it's the yips or what, but he got shelled, walked three guys, allowed five earned and two thirds against the Giants, was the reason why they lost, didn't even take the loss. But he's 0-5 this year and he's blown two saves. So you lost two games against the Tigers. They're not crazy good. And, you know, he's had blips. He's had moments where he can do well. Last month in June, did great, you know, for lack of a better term, struck out 16 in 16 innings. You mentioned the extension, Nick, so if you want to elaborate more on that, feel free. But, I mean, it's like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde here, where one month is really, really good, another month could be better, but that's just not going to get done. April for him was awful. He was you know, he's been with a couple of different teams so far this year. So if I'm not mistaken, this year, it looks like he's pitched with other teams, but I don't think he had pitched with – oh, I guess he had. So he's pitched with the Mets, the Orioles, the Dodgers this year. So honestly, this is someone who's going to be an Airbnb gem. He's just going to be staying at a different place every week. So previously with the Mets, then with the Orioles. Orioles – went back to the acquired by the Mets, then previously with the Mets, acquired by the Dodgers. So he's been with the same team more than once, and he falls apart and figures it out and then falls apart again. So, yeah, this is a guy who now has had his fourth home this year. Last year, he had a couple homes, played with the Pittsburgh Pirates and the Chicago White Sox. The year before that, Pittsburgh and Cleveland and Seattle. So this is a guy that's turning into – oh my God, what's the name of that? Is it Octavio Dotel, the guy who's had like 18 teams? Or he's like the safety for those that play Immaculate Grid. This guy, Johan Ramirez, is going to be that guy. He's going to be that 0.01% because no one's going to say his name. So for those of you paying attention, if you see Seattle, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Chicago, the Mets, the Orioles, the Dodgers, and probably tomorrow the Red Sox, use him. Anything else you want to add, Nick? Is there anything you want to add about the extension piece? I know you shared that a moment ago.
Basically, extension is how close you the home plate you release the ball. And, you know, a guy like Cooper Criswell who throws like 90 tops, just it makes it play up a little bit. So I know Breslow in his early interviews in spring training was talking about how he prefers pitchers with like a lead extension, which basically just means it looked their fastballs play up a little bit for the most part, but it's just something I added. I looked it up really quickly, and he's in the 95th percentile of all relief pitchers. So just something to touch on a little bit.
Yeah, no. Fair game. Hopefully he can translate that to success with his fourth stop this year. Jason, anything else you want to add, my friend?
No, I think it's, again, just in general, he's got to start being bold. You know, the safe – trades and the safe moves are not going to get it done this year. And if he sticks with the safe route, they're going to get leapfrogged by Seattle. They're going to find themselves out of the wild card race, and that's going to be that. So he's got to, at some point, you know, make, you know, Terry alludes to it all the time on the midweek show. He said, you know, there's going to be a painful trade at some point. Yeah. So many prospects, so many big names that people want to hang on to. You can't keep all of them. At some point, you've got to make the painful trade to improve the team. I just don't know if the next 48 hours, I don't think he's got the guts to do it.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. This is going to be another one where we're left with our we're left holding the bag and nothing pretty in the bag. There's a nice hole in it. That is going to do it for all of the Bastards. Everyone have a great one. Take care.